This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The concern that's particular to sub-Saharan Africa is, depending on the country, there may not be as good surveillance to be able to identify the cases as they emerge, to track the number of contacts to make sure it doesn't spread to others. And if the disease takes hold, then there's the concern about, depending on the country, whether or not the treatment that's available will be sufficient not to have a unduly large death toll.
That's Thomas Boyke, Director of Global Health at the Council on Foreign Relations, on the new coronavirus possible impact on Africa. Details coming up. Meanwhile, Uganda has quarantined more than 100 people due to concerns about the new coronavirus. And U.S. President Donald Trump meets today with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta at the White House. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story: so far, there have been no confirmed cases of the new coronavirus in Africa. Still, health authorities on the continent are bracing for the probability that their countries will face outbreaks. In an interview with Thomas Boyke, Director of Global Health at the Council on Foreign Relations, VOA's Adam Phillips learned about Africa's abilities and challenges in terms of disease surveillance, control and treatment, along with lessons learned from the Ebola and SARS outbreaks.
So currently, we have suspected cases in a variety of countries, but we do not have confirmed cases yet. Most people expect that to occur. At this point, of course, cases have already spread to 26 countries worldwide. Many of your listeners will not need me to tell them there's a large and growing presence in terms of Chinese people and Chinese investment. The downside of an intimate relationship in an increasingly globalized world is that, like many other countries, are opened up to the spread of disease in this way.
How concerned are you overall?
I am concerned. First of all, I'm concerned about the spread of the virus. It does seem to be infectious. We don't know exactly to what degree. We also don't know how fatal the disease is yet, but it seems to be perhaps less deadly than SARS. But given the number of cases, we're already at more than 17,000 in a month. SARS, which was a coronavirus that had an outbreak in 2002 to 2003, in 4 months caused 8,000 cases. So we're already double that in 1/4 the time. The concern that's particular to sub-Saharan Africa is, depending on the country, there may not be as good surveillance to be able to identify the cases as they emerge, to track the number of contacts to make sure it doesn't spread to others. And if the disease takes hold, then there's the concern about, depending on the country, whether or not the treatment that's available will be sufficient not to have a unduly large death toll from the disease.
Can you flesh this out with a recent example?
Let's just take the West Africa Ebola outbreak as an example. So we're talking about Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. There were cases that occurred in neighboring countries, most notably Nigeria. Nigeria, for instance, is seen to have a stronger capacity to identify cases and track them. It was a regional center for efforts around polio immunization, and there's been a lot of investment. That said, the other thing I want to point out about the West African Ebola outbreak is the case fatality rate ended up being 40%, meaning 4 out of 10 cases resulted in death. That's awfully high. But in other countries, Ebola had significantly lower case fatality rate. For those poorer nations with more limited health systems and more limited surveillance capabilities, they're likely to see a faster spread of the disease and worse outcomes from it, a higher rate of deaths and severe illnesses than you will see in other settings.
How would you sum up the situation for everyday Africans to hear?
Well, the good news is that there's been significant investment in the preparedness of many countries in the region to detect an outbreak early, respond to it, and control it. There's now an Africa CDC that works with other centers of disease control around the world, African CDC has already started marshaling resources to prepare itself. So all of that is to the good. The issue you have is more on the broader capacity of health systems. Many governments in sub-Saharan Africa still spend extremely little on health and have the health systems bear the cost of that.
What about international aid from governments and donors?
The thing to mention on that is most international assistance is disease-specific. It's to supply treatment for HIV or prevention measures like insecticide-treated bed nets for malaria. A relatively small portion of foreign aid goes to build health systems. We saw that in Ebola outbreak, and I worry we may see it again in this particular outbreak should it spread to sub-Saharan Africa.
That was Thomas Boyke, Director of Global Health for the Council on. That was Thomas Boyke, Director of Global Health for the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Plagues and the Paradox of Progress. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Meanwhile, Uganda has quarantined more than 100 people due to concerns about the new coronavirus. The people have been to China recently and are suspected of being in contact with cases of the virus. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Although Uganda has not recorded a confirmed case of the new coronavirus, a number of people who traveled from China have been quarantined and are being checked for any signs and symptoms. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
Out of the 100, there are 43 Chinese. The rest are Ugandans. Out of these, 3 are students who came in. They are quarantined in different places. As I mentioned before, the numbers are huge. We cannot quarantine everybody in one place because some people may already be incubating. Others may be free. So if we put all of you together, the ones who are free will contract the disease from those who are incubating. There will be followed up for a total of 14 days by our surveillance officers.
She says two isolation centers have been opened up for some of the people, while others are being advised to undertake self-quarantine at home.
Those found with signs and symptoms will be quarantined in Entebbe Regional Referral Hospital and China-Uganda Friendship Hospital, Naguru. Those without visible symptoms will be isolated and quarantined in their houses after sensitization. It is important that we quarantine you in your home where you can have access to food, but it also teaches you to be responsible because you have family, friends, and in-laws living with you, so that if you're careless, you will infect your own loved ones.
At Uganda's International Airport in Entebbe, screening of all travelers has been heightened. Ayol James is an aviation public health specialist at Entebbe.
Immediately, the passengers, as you're seeing, they arrive. There, the thermal scan, it's a very powerful machine, this one, picks the temperatures of everybody. You'll see from the screen there, as it picks the temperature, we are able to identify somebody who is having a temperature more than 37.4 degrees Celsius. And the team are able to chat the person and talk and ask a little bit more questions. And we cross-check with infrared thermometer to make sure that the temperature is, probably just because of heat or that's putting on the heart.
The public is being advised to follow the prevention measures. Yona Waldemariam is the World Health Organization, WHO, Uganda country representative.
Washing hands with soap or alcohol-based, using a mask will also help. Avoid close contacts.
Unlike countries that have placed travel restrictions on China for their citizens, Uganda is only advising travelers to take extra caution or suspend their travels until the situation normalizes. Dr. Diana Atwine is the permanent secretary in Uganda's health ministry.
We alerted the public about this and advised the public to be cautious and to be careful and, if possible, to avoid to go to those areas that are affected with the coronavirus.
Uganda has set aside $6.7 million for development of a preparedness plan in case the virus is detected in Uganda. As of 4th February, a total of 24,000 cases of coronavirus have been confirmed in 25 countries. 494 people have died in China, while two deaths have been reported outside the country where it originated. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Kenya banned FGM, female genital mutilation, in 2011, but the tradition has continued in some ethnic communities. President Uhuru Kenyatta vowed to end FGM before 2023, 7 years ahead of a United Nations deadline to stop the practice globally. Activists, however, say more needs to be done, as millions of girls are still at risk of undergoing the procedure. Rael Ambor reports from Narok, Kenya.
At just 7 years old, Sylvia Case's family told her she would be circumcised, a tradition known as female genital mutilation, FGM, because of the physical damage caused. One day before the ceremony, Case ran away from her home village of Ewasongiro to the town of Narok, a three-hour walk.
I just decided I better run away even if I'm going to die, because I had that motion that how can my father never took me to school and now he wants to circumcise me. And then, of course, after circumcision and you are not in school, what next? You will get married. So I say I better run away, whether I will get help or not.
The Tasaru Girls Rescue Center gave Case the shelter and support to avoid circumcision and stay in school. The center's 63-year-old founder, Agnes Pareyo, has helped more than 1,000 girls escape genital mutilation since 1999. Her mission to protect girls is a personal one, as a family put her through FGM when she was 14 years old.
Because of what I went through, nobody could tell me that FGM was good. I didn't know other effects, but I knew the pain I went through, the bleeding I bleeded, the whole day, and nobody cared. They kept talking.
Kenya banned FGM in 2011, but some ethnic groups like the Maasai still see it as a traditional rite of womanhood before marriage. The United Nations say 1 in 5 Kenyan women between 15 and 49 years old have been circumcised. Activists say more needs to be done to reach the UN goal to end FGM worldwide by 2030. Anne Juguna is Plan International's regional disaster and risk management specialist.
It is estimated that around 200 million girls in the world living today, alive today, have undergone one form of FGM or another globally. And it is further estimated that 15 more million girls will undergo FGM by 2030. And these girls are between the ages of 15 and 19 years old. And this is a huge number that we cannot allow to happen.
Activists say more community and family support is needed to end FGM in Kenya. After final high school exams this year, Case plans to return home for the first time in 11 years to reconcile with the family that tried to circumcise her. She wants to share with them her dream of becoming a doctor and show everyone in the village that girls should not be cut and are instead better off in school. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Narok, Kenya.
U.S. President Donald Trump meets today with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta at the White House. The two leaders are expected to discuss a possible free trade deal, which would be a first between the U.S. and an African country. Kenya is strategically important to the U.S. as Washington tries to offset the influence of China. China eclipsed the U.S. as Africa's top trading partner more than a decade ago. Kenyatta met with Trump in August 2018 when they established the United States Kenya Bilateral Strategic Dialogue. The White House says Trump looks forward to building on this momentum and discussing new opportunities to advance cooperation and trade. Trump has not shown much interest in African countries since he has been in office. The U.S. has free trade pacts with 20 countries, but none of them from Africa. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. So far, there have been no confirmed cases of the new coronavirus in Africa. Still, health authorities on the continent are bracing for the probability that their countries will face outbreaks. And U.S. President Donald Trump meets today with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta at the White House. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A prolonged dry spell in southern Africa has caused a decline in mopane worms, a key source of income and food for rural communities in Botswana. Experts say over-harvesting of the protein-rich caterpillars has also affected breeding, as Mokandisu Dube reports from the town of Palapai.
Mutwezi Grimang ekes out a living harvesting and selling what locals call edible diamonds, the mopane worms, a caterpillar and seasonal delicacy in Botswana. But this year, harvesters like Grimang expect little income as Southern Africa's prolonged drought means fewer worms, known locally as pani. Grimang says the dry spell has killed many mopane worms, but despite the drought, she travels to faraway mopane woodlands to harvest the worm. She says the caterpillars are her way of life, or her children will starve. The caterpillar is harvested in the woodlands, cooked and then dried. Mopane worm vendors like Yawone Sokomotso sell their product along the highway. But there's not much to sell this year, she says. Sekomoto says without the worm, they survive through selling farm produce like groundnuts and maize. Botswana's chief climatologist Raditupa Raditupa says while climate change plays a role, it's not the only reason for the decline of the mopane worm.
First of all, that pani used to be there for people used to use it just for relish. But nowadays, people have grown into the market and they're using it for commercial basis. They sell it even across the borders.
In the capital, Haboroni, 50 kilograms or 110 pounds of mopane worms now sell for as much as $220. Over-harvesting has contributed to the caterpillar's decline, says University of Botswana researcher Efias Mokari.
Another reason is also the increased demand for mopane caterpillars, not only here locally in Botswana, but even beyond the borders, considering that mopane caterpillars are also used for manufacturing livestock feeds. So there is increased demand.
Since 2013, Botswana has issued permits to regulate the harvesting of the worms. But locals say better protections are needed for the worm that helps sustain rural livelihoods in southern Africa. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Palabe, Botswana.
Nigerian youth have held a vigil for a student killed last month by the Islamic State's West Africa province, a breakaway Boko Haram group. The militants released a video showing the gruesome execution of 22-year-old Ropville Dachia, who the group abducted on January 9th on his way from his hometown of Jos to Maiduguri. Ifeoke Etang reports from Jos, Nigeria.
Thousands of young Nigerians dressed in black took to the streets of the city of Jos in north-central Nigeria on January 30th to mourn the death of Ropville Dachia. The 22-year-old student was abducted by suspected Boko Haram terrorists 3 weeks earlier. His uncle, David Dachia, confirmed an execution video released by the Islamic State news agency was of the young man being killed.
We, the family, we regret the death of this our son, because his life span has been cut short.
Ropville Dachia's older brother, Mark Blanc Dachia, says family members are still coming to terms with the loss.
He was a God-fearing person, very generous and a hardworking person.
Ropville Dachia's death is the latest in a string of executions by the Boko Haram faction known as the Islamic State's West Africa province. Boko Haram has killed over 35,000 people and displaced over 2 million in Nigeria since launching its insurgency in 2009. Security analyst Lahasan Baba says Nigeria needs to beef up efforts in rural communities to defeat the Islamist militants.
You cannot find a lasting solution in the fight against insurgency or terrorism. The government or agencies, security agencies need to step up their game. They need to step up their game by improving security along the highways leading to this, the Northeast, to secure all the travelers, irrespective of their creed or religion or where they come from.
As nighttime fell, friends and family gathered at the Dachia family house to pay last respects. They lit candles and held them up in a farewell salute to the young student. One after the other, the mourners placed their candles at the foot of a tree in the middle of the Dachia family compound. Local youth leader Longo Dakwam says because the body has not been found, this is their only way of laying Robville Dachia to rest.
We've seen the gory videos that went viral, you know, to us, and we share the same blood as human beings. So, you know, that really touched us deep. It really cut us so deep that we felt that, look, our brother, even though, you know, we cannot get his corpse here, we are going to do a symbolic burial.
Meanwhile, Jos State Student Body President Sean Homualak is calling on the government to rescue Lilian Giang, another student in Boko Haram captivity.
As students that we are, we want to beg on the indulgence of the federal government and even the international community to come to our aid as we still anticipate any information about Lilian Giang.
Enough is enough. Yeah. We
stand as people. Following a 3-day prayer and fasting that ended on February 2nd, the Christian Association of Nigeria and CAN took to the streets in a nationwide march against Boko Haram's violence. It raised concerns about the Christian community being a target of the Islamist militant group's recent executions. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has asked Nigerians to show unity and not allow Boko Haram to divide the nation along religious lines. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.